Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes, and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. I'd like to introduce you to a buddy of mine, John Cotton of Barnaby Recruitment. John and I worked together many years ago at Deloitte, where he got to understand as an accountant what it was like to work for a large professional services firm. For the last 11 years, he's recruited hundreds of future leaders into professional accounting firms across Australia. Today, I wanted to pick John's brains on how do I find the right candidate or help the candidates be successful. John, how do we actually find the right candidates?
It's mainly through networking. Din has been a godsend to the recruiter, and a lot of people are found on LinkedIn. One tip is to have your LinkedIn profile up to date. Be quite verbose about what you're doing. Just don't say senior accountant at Pricewaterhouse. Explain what you're doing at Pricewaterhouse. Explain that you're in audit. Explain that you've been working on financial services companies, or explain that you've been working on retail industry customers or something like that, because different things like that are things that people pick up.
LinkedIn is prime hunting territory.
Seek used to be really good. I actually think Seek is probably better for what you would call lower end jobs, the laboring type jobs, or maybe even in my side, the bookkeeper. But professional services, the accountant, the tax account auditor, the candidate is expecting you to come to them. People aren't looking as hard as what everybody seems to think. The great resignation is not really happening here in Australia. People are moving, but they need to be coaxed. The reason why people are moving now is that salaries have increased slightly, and people are saying, can move here for another $5,000 or another $10,000. And then there's some extraordinary stories of people getting double what they were previously on. If you put an advertisement in Seek, you don't normally get many responses as a recruiter. 4, 5, 10 responses, of which 8 of the 10 are probably from overseas and haven't got permanent residency or a visa that enables them to work here in Australia. They're hopeful for sponsorship. And you go, well, in this case, they're not a valid candidate at this point. You feel that you're wasting $300 every time you advertise on Seek to a lot of extent. Seek is good for a recruitment firm publicity to put you out in the marketplace. Anybody looking for a role goes, oh, Barnaby Recruitment, they do accounting roles. So I'll go to Barnaby Recruitment if I'm looking for a role. But they don't normally respond much to ads on Seek.
Oh, so it sounds actually a bit like print advertising for real estate. If I was looking for an SME general manager or a senior manager's role, would that be more of a LinkedIn type thing, or would that be more of a
LinkedIn? Yes, it is. Yes, it's LinkedIn, but it's also connections that you've made and maintained over a number of years. A senior manager role, you've probably known that person since they were a senior accountant, 3, 4, 5 years experience. You know, now they've got 8, 9, 10 years experience, and you've kept in contact with them for 3, 4, 5 years. They, like and trust you. They're prepared to have a conversation with you.
The power of your network is absolutely golden. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. You build it over time as a recruiter.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. What's the deal with, I decide, okay, I need to recruit a position. How do I go about that process? How do I fulfill a job spec or even complete one at this point? You said the other day there was a question around, do you even know what you actually want?
From the employer's side, do they know exactly what they want? And from the candidate side, do they know the type of job that they want when they're presenting themselves? Do they have some conviction about the role that they're going into? From a recruiter's perspective, it is an iterative process. The parameters start moving as the job evolves with the client. Sometimes the client says, I want somebody to do this. When you come up with candidates, they go, really what I want is somebody who's specifically international tax, or take out those and focus on the international tax or whatever they're specifically looking for.
Is it still a process of actually advertising on something like LinkedIn, or is it using a recruiter to search?
Many organizations think they can do it cheaply, advertise on Seek. Then they'll come back and say, I'm not having any responses at all. I'm not having any success. The people who are responding are not very good. Can you help? Go looking through your database of people. Make phone calls, talk to people, just have a conversation with people and find out whether they're interested. You may find out that they're not interested, but they have a friend who might be interested.
Right.
You know, so a colleague who's thinking of moving. Yeah.
So using a recruiter engages an active, proactive search as opposed to hopefully resumes will flood through the door by some miracle.
Yes. Miracles are not happening very often.
So let's say that you've found us half a dozen candidates, or are you talking about two or three candidates?
We're talking less than five generally of people who are a genuine candidate. Yeah.
And so how do you sort the wheat from the chaff? How do I even get looked at? You're doing a search, making phone calls, touching into your network and your own databases, but how do you get found in your database or in LinkedIn? How do you stand out? Because there's got to be thousands of candidates.
It should goes back to that first point about keeping your LinkedIn profile up to date. If somebody is actively looking, they should have their LinkedIn profile up to date with a title that is fairly generic, senior accountant, senior analyst, something like that. If you don't want something exotic, you may not be found. A lot of the time you're searching on title, years of experience, that type of thing. Have a title that somebody understands.
So that at least gets you into the funnel.
Yes.
If I'm a candidate, I've got to have a complete LinkedIn profile. Got to be honest, but it's also got to be specific. Photographs are fairly important.
Put a professional photograph on LinkedIn. It's not a Facebook page. Don't put a photo of you surfing. Put a photo of you that the firm that you're actually working for currently would be proud to have.
A beer glass is probably
not what's going to go down. There may be 5% of the population who actually think that's fantastic. I want this guy because he's my type. But the other 95% are going, I think I'll leave that one.
Fair enough. Yeah. And once we get narrowed down to five candidates, then the next step really is interview. So what do I expect and how do I handle it? So what are you really looking for, John?
You're looking for somebody who's going to stand out. Why do you want this job? How does this fit into you? You want to know that they know why they're going for the job. Sometimes they don't feel their career is moving where they are, so they are starting to look. Others may be just kicking tires. And the ones who are just kicking tires, you go, how are you going to show a sense of conviction to the client when you actually meet the client?
What are the sorts of questions that you might go through with them? Obviously, why do you want the job? But what else would you be looking to ask?
It's something I ask more junior people, but occasionally the more senior ones, is that people think when they're going for a job that's all about them. You know, from an employer's perspective, it's all about the employer. You've got to get into the head of the employer. You go back to the very basics and you go, why does somebody employ somebody? What are they trying to achieve? And when I ask that question, many candidates go straight to themselves and go, because I've got the right skills and things like that. No. Why does somebody employ somebody? What are they trying to achieve? The purpose of a business is to make money. Mm. Once a candidate understands their purpose is to help make money, they understand where they fit into the organization and how they can best approach the client. When it comes to professional practice, it's easy to show how you're making money for an organization. You have a charge to the client for every hour of work. Now, you say to a candidate, how much of that goes to pay you? You get various answers from 50%. I've had somebody say 100%. And I said, there's a formula within professional practice, essentially a third. One third goes to pay you. So if you're getting on your charge out rate's $150 an hour, one third of that will go to your salary, approximately $50 per hour. Okay? The second third goes to pay for the overheads of the business, the lease on the building, your computers, maintaining the business. They go, that goes to the owners of the business. And I go, yes, that's the reason you're being employed. They have work that needs to be done and they engage you to do it and they take one third of whatever they charge the client. It goes into the pot to pay the partners.
Yeah.
And you go, I'm here to put some money in the pot of the partners. If you realize that, you start to actually get into the head of the partners, especially in an interview, let them know I'm here to help you make money. So I need to be productive. I need to be, you know, charging my time out to a client, you know. And if they hear those types of words, they go, "Ooh, we've got somebody here who actually knows why they're working for us."
Yeah.
That makes it, you know, interesting. It's probably one of the most potent things a candidate can do in engaging with a client, is to let them know that they know the reason for being there.
What else should a candidate do to stand out?
If you're being interviewed, you ought to know what the business does. Let's start with the first one. Have the technical skills to do the job. It's like the Einstein thing about if a fish is judged by how well it can climb a tree, it's going to be poorly thought of being not very smart. If somebody says this is a role for somebody who's got the tax skills and the requirement of Division 7A is required, and they don't know what Division 7A is, then you've got some issues. If the job spec or the advertisement or something says, you know, have to know Division 7A, in your preparation for the interview, make sure you know what Division 7A is. Make sure you know the technical things that the client is going to be looking for. Also, understand what the business does. We're talking professional practices. It's fairly easy to know what they're doing, but what type of clients and industries do they focus on? Do they focus mainly on retail, financial services, manufacturing? What is it that that business focuses on? And who are their competitors? Who are the competitors to the accounting firm? Who do their peers and who do they actually look up to? That applies more when you're out in the industry. You could be going for work at a widget manufacturer and you go, well, who else makes widgets out there and how do they do it? Understand who their competitors. So what you're really doing here, letting them know you have some knowledge of the industry and that you're not coming in green to the organization. That's the main thing. One thing that a lot of auditors, you know, work for the Big Four, got 3 years experience, maybe a little bit more, want to go out into industry as a financial accountant or something like that. It used to be a rite of passage back in our day. You get to 3 or 4 years or you go, I want to go out into industry. I would say, come on down. We'll show you how to do it. Now, there's less investment in somebody joining an organization. They expect you to be running as you come through the door. Auditors now, when looking for a role in industry, they should be trying to focus on two areas. One is, have they done the work in their audit work? Have they had a secondment to a client for financial accounting? Have they focused on monthly reporting as opposed to just checking the work from the auditor? Be able to show the client that you actually have experience or know what you're doing. Very often they say to an auditor, have you done the work? And they go, oh yeah, I'm an auditor. I've been auditing these accounts for a number of years. Have you done the monthly reporting? They want to see an example of where how you can transition quickly. The other is to have some experience in that industry. If you're an auditor and you want to work in retail, try and work on clients in your firm that focus on retail. You can go to the client and say, look, I've got experience in retail.
You mentioned last time that the story of a candidate in the movements.
I was working at such and such a place. And I was enjoying what I was doing and getting good experience there. Then I got a phone call from a recruiter who said, I need somebody who can do this and this at another organization. Right. And you go, that was interesting. And that was the impetus for me to move. Or it could be that you come to an end of what you were doing at that client. And you realize that in order for you to grow, you completed the assignment. The project is not going to go any further. You know, you need to go somewhere else. It's the skills you learn in what you're doing that you can say, I was working on retail clients and they have this specific way of doing things. I know how to do this, yes, which makes me right to do this job with you. The movements, the reasons for you to move or the skills you've gained that make you attractive to the next role. Yeah. You know, an article says, your career is no longer a straight line. It's a squiggling line. You know, from my own career, there are times I've gone for a role and one organization says, you don't have the specific experience we want. And you go somewhere else and they go, oh, we really appreciate your depth of experience because you've done a number of different things.
And I guess the question around why you left any particular role. So there's a couple of good ones there, but I guess there's also the issue of gaps in the story. And how does a candidate handle the gaps? This week, we've celebrated International Women's Day. Regardless of whether a candidate's male or female, there may have maternity or parental leave experience, which could be anywhere from 3 months to 10 years.
Yeah.
How do you handle something like that?
Well, explain it as it is. Tell the truth. maternity or paternity is a good one to explain. What you've also got to say is, okay, I was off for 6 months because my son was born and I stayed home with my son and looked after him. But during that time, I kept up to date with what was going on in the industry by going online and doing courses. Indicate that you've maintained a finger in the pie, so to speak. You've got to indicate that you haven't let your skills dwindle.
Particularly with younger candidates, there's the whole gap year or the opportunity to travel overseas or backpack. Yep. And how do I maximize what that looks like?
Well, you've got to think in terms of what experiences did you gain when you're away, the ability to communicate with other people in foreign circumstances is a fantastic skill for any professional. That ability to pick up the telephone, talk to somebody and feel comfortable in the process, that the skill that you gain when you're traveling. Let people know that you've gained skills. Don't say, do the Kentucky tour around Europe and I know where all the main tourist sites are and there's an Australian pub in Paris and in Rome as well, and we spend a lot of time in those. You actually have some purpose with what you're doing.
And be able to jog to it. So it's been a while since I've gone through an interview or an action job as opposed to working with clients on projects. Is it a one-way shooting match?
It's a dialogue, bit like a conversation we're having now, the interview. I had a candidate once who was going for a role, doing a bit of a briefing as how to handle the interview. I said to her, ask him about himself. She goes, can I do that? I said, yeah, sure. Ask him about himself, how he's got to where he is, what he likes about his job, what he's done that's made him successful. And she goes, oh, well, okay. I said, the guys you go out on a date with, which ones do you enjoy being with most? The ones that talk the whole night about themselves or the ones that ask you about you? The penny dropped. She took on board what I had to say and she got the job. Yeah. People are very happy about sharing. We're probably at that age where we're happy to share our wisdom and knowledge we've gained over the years, which is people should realize that they can ask people about what they've done, their background, because people like talking about themselves.
Anything else we should highlight for candidates in being successful in this process? Should they ask, how much money am I going to earn and when's my next promotion likely to be?
That's generally second interview. First interview is getting to know you. Second interview, if they're interested, money will come up at some point. They'll start asking about your current salary or what are you looking for now going forward.
So can I ask what I'm earning now?
Ask that. It was like, what are you currently on? Oh, I'm on the 65 package. Oh, good. Would you take 65? They go, why move? Businesses are wondering why people weren't moving. People have to have an incentive, especially in professional practice, for the same thing in a different environment for the same price.
Yeah. And so you're seeing much in the way of innovative packaging?
FBT got rid of that years ago, innovative packaging. Yes. You can have a car, your tax benefits and things like that. Innovative packaging is now working from home. We have the technology that enables you to work from home, which everybody's found out they do have it with COVID. So, but the package is that we'd like you in the office 3 days a week, but you can decide what you do with the other 2 days. Or I've heard 3 days in the week, 2 days at home, and one fixed day that you had to be in the office. Like everybody had to be there on Monday or something like that.
A bit of town hall type meetings.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The important thing is selling yourself. Don't tell any lies, but say, I've done this. Be prepared to let them know how good you are. Don't assume they understand that you know something because you've done something else. And it's a bit like LinkedIn. Be quite verbose about what you've done. And with a CV as well, be very full about what you write. The client can't interpret what you've done. Sometimes people say, oh, I should have a CV that covers only one page. If you want to do a summary CV, fantastic, but also do a full one that has everything the recruiters should be able to bring out a bit when talking with somebody and bring out certain things. But if you've done things that are different, explain what you've done, because it could be the key getting the next role.
So just on that, John, LinkedIn's got this function, print the summary, which basically looks like a CV.
Yeah.
Should candidates rely on that, or should they actually do something that looks a bit more professional or a little less?
The professional practice is very important. Very important. You know, I've actually interviewed purely because I thought of a letter. You know, you may not have all the, you know, all the skills that I'm looking for, but you've really put together a very professional looking cover letter, which was addressed properly. The salutation was right, and there was a reference to what they're looking for, and the cover letter specifically addressed the job they're applying for. This is fantastic. And you know, you can sometimes reject people because of a poor cover letter, as in, "Dear sir, madam, with regards to the job you advertised, I think I'm a pretty good candidate. Please see my CV." There's no professionalism about it at all. Are you going to translate what you've just done here into the business you're going to work at? It doesn't go down too well.
Second question that's popped up, I was listening to an interview with Simon Sinek the other day, and he was talking about millennials. So young candidates, I'm not picking on a whole cohort, but the 20 to 30-year-olds are a multi-screen generation. They're very tech savvy, YouTube, TikTok, competent. What advice would you give to millennials going into an interview? Some of my clients talk about the challenges of getting young people in that age group to pick up the phone and speak to another person. They'd be much preferred to actually send an email or send a text.
Do they want the job? I'll give you a little bit of my own experience. I was with KPMG in London when we invented risk management as a service offering in 1997, and for the next 3 years, we iterated the process and it ended up becoming risk-based internal auditing. I was there at the beginning of risk management and risk-based internal auditing. I came back to Australia after having worked in over 30 countries and spending 18, 19 years overseas. Australia said, "But you haven't done it here. So how relevant is what you've done?" I went for a role and they said, "But are you a member of the Institute of Internal Auditors?" And I go, "But I'm a chartered accountant. Why do I need to be a member of the Institute of Internal Auditors? Have you done CIA, which is the Certified Internal Auditor Examination, an international accredited qualification?" And I said, "But I'm a chartered accountant. Why do I need to be a member of that?" In London, never once was my Australian qualification queried, though it was regarded as being pretty good. I realized that Australians are concerned about anything that happens overseas the way they want it. They want to see a qualification. So I joined the Member Institute of Internal Auditors and became a CIA to comply with Australia, because I knew I couldn't bend Australia. I had to bend to Australia. Now, the millennials, they're going for a job and they want the job and they say, "Well, I want it my way." No, we went back to the very beginning. What's the reason somebody employs somebody? It's all about the employer. The employer wants to make money. It's not because you've been to university and you've got a degree that you're entitled to a job. It's how can you actually help the business generate money? Now, I actually say to the millennials is learn how to pick up the phone. You're going to have to do it when you're in the office and working with somebody. Learn how to pick up the phone. Learn how to walk to somebody else's office and have a talk to them instead of actually sending a message when the office is two doors down. You know, learn those skills. They're a part of the process of being in business. Learn them. You're going to have to do them sooner or later. The sooner you do them, the better.
Yeah.
The important thing is the employer is where the focus is. It's not the actual candidate. You've got to realize you're there to fulfill what the employer wants, not what you want.
So whether the great resignation or migration is occurring or not, I certainly know that a lot of clients are recruiting at the moment and they're finding that there are a lot of candidates with fairly high expectations. As a recruiter or employer wanting to select and encourage someone to take a role, apart from money, what else can you do? I mean, as the interviewer, how do you set yourself apart from the other interviewers that good candidates will no doubt be targeted by multiple roles?
People talk about culture. That's not something that you can actually say, "Oh, we have a great culture. that's something that has to have been there over time. If somebody were to say, we have a great culture, but the candidate knows that there's been five people who's left in the last 6 months because of one particular senior manager or partner who's made things difficult. If you have a great culture, it's going to fall cold. The environment where you work, who the people you're going to work for. Actually, that's probably the most important thing. The people you're going to work with, the most important thing about any career.
Right.
Yeah, is that it's better to have a job where you're working with good people but less pay than it is to work with people who, you know, are toxic and they're paying you more.
As a candidate, how do I discover that?
Well, at the time, you're going to do some due diligence on the organization that you're going to work for. It's a bit like we were talking earlier about what does the business do? What do you know about that business? Where I'm in the industry, I'm fairly fortunate. The major accounting firms, they're fairly generic. It does come down to, you know, personalities and organizations. And as a candidate, you're linked in with other people as well. You find out who else is at the same organization. You can always call them up and say, you're at that organization. What's it like to work there? Or you can call up somebody who has left that organization and say, what were they like to work for? Why did you leave?
Yeah. It's important for the candidate to do their own due diligence.
Yeah.
I guess also at interview, there's probably also the opportunity for them to ask if they could meet some of the team.
Yes, they can do that. But actually, when we're talking about ask the people about them, ask the interviewer about them themselves, that's a good way of finding out what the organization's like as well. You can ask the interviewer, what's your background? How did you get to this job? Why did you choose this firm? If you've got an interviewer who goes, my background is this, this, and this, and I came here because of, and they explain what's good about the firm. Or you get, so the interviewer goes, well, I went for the job, they offered it to me, and I said yes. You don't get great enthusiasm for the organization. You know? Yeah. So that's part of your due diligence process, is even during the interview, asking the person, you know, why did they join the firm?
Yeah. Brilliant, John. That's really helpful. On a slightly different bent, there's no question that the recruitment process is involved as a general manager or a senior manager or a CEO, you know, carve out an afternoon and just knock through a few candidates and Bob's your uncle. We've got new employees on Monday. Is how do I engage a recruiter and choose one? And secondly, how do I be a good client of the recruiter? Let's start with that. How do I go about engaging a recruiter? What should I expect if I've never used a recruiter before?
Many recruiters are transactional. It's a sales job. They are under pressure from their organization to get placements, which means money is coming in for the recruiter. And it becomes, so it, each job comes up, it's a transaction. I'll throw five candidates at the client, see whether they like those candidates, and hopefully they'll say yes to one of them. Whereas I try to take a more consultative approach, as in, what are you looking for? What don't you want? And try and actually provide them with candidates that are actually more related to their specific needs. What's the actual issue they're trying to solve? Do the candidates have the skills they're looking for? Sometimes you get to understand the personality of an organization. There are some organizations that, you know, that you go, this type of candidate would be better than another type of candidate. You know, there are some organizations when it comes to the accounting profession that are fairly outgoing, they're advisory focused. They really want somebody who's got a little bit more personality and wants to actually be right in the face of the client. Others just need somebody who sits in the corner and does the work. You've got to actually get a feel and understanding for the client before you can provide them with the right candidate.
Sure. A good outcome is the result of both a good client and a good service provider.
Yes.
If you're both doing the right thing by each other, then the outcome usually is really good.
Yes.
But what do I need to do to be a good client of a professional recruiter?
Yeah, know what you want and be prepared to articulate it. You know, it can be annoying when you provide exactly what the client specifies that they want. And then they go, oh, no, like, I really don't want. But that's part of the process to a certain extent. We mentioned that the parameters coming in, the client will say they want a certain thing and then realize, but we want to skew it this way. That's where we're more inclined with somebody who's got these skills as opposed to having all the skills. Sometimes it's a process of being patient and providing the client with options, and they essentially say, not that one, but can we have a couple more down this?
Excellent, John. Thank you very much. That was a really good deep dive into this, the recruitment process, how to be an outstanding candidate, what businesses are looking for, what the candidates should be considering when they're trying to be relevant to future employers, how to be found, how to be attractive, and also their rights to conduct their own due diligence, which is only part of figuring out who they're actually being interviewed by, but also engaging with the interviewer in a way that the interviewer might find pretty engaging themselves. Come out of this process with a smile on their face, got a better than average chance.
Yes.
And that's an outstanding thing. John, thank you so much for your time on this today. It's been really excellent.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, John. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening to the Critical Few Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe where you listen to podcasts, follow us on LinkedIn for more insights, and share the show with other business leaders. Stay focused and take action.